Suns fans, you know what time it is in the PHX.
Empire of the Suns.
Phoenix Suns.
The Empire of the Suns podcast is brought to you by Sonic. Sonic.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kel Nelson, joined, as always, by Kevin Zimmerman. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, we're doing this over Zoom. If anyone saw, there is a giant light in the sky. It could be the end times, which is a great segue into this podcast about the Phoenix Suns, right?
Did I miss light in the sky Twitter? Did that not show up on my algorithm?
Yeah, I mean, the algorithm's probably broken as heck right now, so you're fine.
Mine is just a bunch of Formula One off-grid gossip, basically, about like their relationships and what's going on. It's like the tabloid version of F1. That's like my algorithm right now. It's pretty good.
That's fun, though. That's fine. It's better than the end times anyway.
And it's like rom-com fan. What do they call not fan videos? But like, you know, the ones where it's like these super cuts that like Zoomers make. I get those of like rom-coms. It's a good place to be. I'm fine with it. It's really great. What's not a good place to be is being 39-29 right now in the Western Conference, and that is where your Phoenix Suns are currently at. As we record this on Monday evening, they are eighth in the Western Conference, and I don't know how to phrase what we're going to cover, because Kevin and I are going to try our best to not repeat ourselves, because a lot of what we're going to be talking about has been covered to some extent. But here we are in mid-March, and to just quickly go through the games, the Boston game, they played okay. They didn't play terrible, but there was certainly a lack of engagement at certain stretches in the game, which is something we've been talking about the whole time. But then Charlotte and Milwaukee, it was pretty much most that outweighed the other parts of the game. Like, they were tuned out more than they were tuned in for both of those games. Charlotte, somewhat understandable, I guess. I don't get it with where they're at in their season right now and how much they need to win and how much they need to improve. But the Milwaukee game, especially with Giannis out, you're on ABC. They're not closing out to shooters on ABC on Sunday with everyone watching. Like, I don't know. The place I'll kick it to you, Kevin, is we had a podcast around Christmas a little bit before that. And after they beat the Wizards and required like a comeback to beat the Wizards, I wrote a column/recap that was just like, it's reality check time, and all of these people that are involved at the top of this need to decide what kind of team they want to be. Like, how are you guys going to use this season? And I think they've decided.
Yeah, decided to not make changes, decided to not react well to situations that they've been in many, many times. I mean, my biggest thing is it's different from like the Clippers right now, who are, they're going up 20, 25 on teams and then blowing big leads. Like, I can say that's, you know, you're good. You know, you have dudes, you're losing focus. You just want to get to the postseason. The Phoenix Suns are, you know, getting behind early or in the first half and trying to make it up. And yeah, they can flip that switch to some degree. And that's where we see the great moments where, okay, there are signs of that team being here. But the fact, you know, I think the Milwaukee game was a good example where, like, yeah, they weren't playing great defense. They were hanging. They were even through a quarter and a half, really. And then the wheels fell off because of the things that had been doing, like, getting them one when they were keeping up. And then you just let that keep building and building. Like, at some point of Bobby Portis hitting what, like 25 or whatever in the first half, it's like, do something different, guard him, close out. Whether that's that transition play I think you were talking about, and or just like in the post when you are guarding him and you are in place, like, put up a little bit more of a fight. So it's, when we talk about identities, like, Royce O'Neal's not going to come in there and make you a tough guy team. Him not being in that rotation, in that starting lineup, I guess, and Josh Okogie being out, yeah, sure, that matters. But at some point, you need Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal to be able to pick that up and hold each other accountable. They're not doing that. And I guess I should say Frank Vogel, too, because, like, one sequence in the Milwaukee game I'll go to, It was right after Portis checked in, I believe, and Eubanks was already in, and there were like three blown plays where it's like, I can't tell if it's Drew Eubanks in the wrong coverage, not knowing what to do, or if it's the help side just not existing when it should have. And that's where it's like, I don't know if like you should be playing Drew Eubanks if he's making those mistakes, you shouldn't, or if it's the coaching just is not getting across to these guys. And whatever it may be, again, it's March. It's almost April. Like, this isn't going to change overnight. Those things aren't even effort a lot of the time, and it just looks like effort. But to me, that's the biggest thing, is like, we can sit here on our couches and say it's an effort thing. And if it is, that's terrible. And even if it's not an effort thing, it's not going to be fixed overnight.
Yeah, that's part of where I was getting at with my reaction to Sunday's loss for the Suns, is that whatever you want to point your finger at as the problem with the team right now, or why it's happening, like, is it coaching? Is it the players not understanding the game plan? Is it a poor game plan? Whatever it is right now, they're just a bad defensive team, and they're not going, and they're bad in ways, much like they're bad offensively and bad defensively and bad team ways. Does that make sense? Like, the way that you would watch the 20-win Suns mess up on defense and mess up on offense, that's actually what this team does. And they're 10 games above 500. Like, that's the reason they're bad. Sometimes it's just a missing link of execution here and there for really good teams that are struggling in those areas. Sometimes it is personnel. Sometimes it's not having the right people, but that's not what any of this is. It's just I was banking on it being continuity to some extent, and they just needed time together, but no. Look, Kevin, when Kevin Durant's not running back on transition after he turns it over, like right when he turns it over, he usually takes a second or two. Who else is running back with him? When Devin Booker just doesn't close out Patrick Beverley in the corner, which, again, I understand the assignment and the read and the scouting report says don't close out on him, but doesn't even move towards him, gives him time, who's going to close out to the corner? You look at a lot of what's going wrong right now with miscommunication and schematic indifferences on defense, and how much confusion there seems to be all the time, and how much, not finger pointing, but just like conversation after a play with like, why'd you do that? Why'd you do this? That's on the coach. You can say it's on the players or whatever, but that is primarily how I think about a coach in all sports, but especially basketball, is keeping the team organized. And they're disorganized, especially defensively, all the time. And that's Vogel's bread and butter. So my point there is that I think that blame is not just one person or even three people in this instance. But when we zoom out and look at what this season for what it is, Grayson Allen's having a career year. Yusuf Nurkic is having a career year. They got a 3-and-D guy at the deadline somehow. They got one. Royce O'Neal got here. Eric Gordon has been inconsistent, and surely for some fans, he's been maddening and frustrating. But for a minimum signing, he's been pretty darn good still. Bradley Beal, in the middle of this, is playing his best basketball of the year right now. So it's on the other people I didn't name. Like, this is on Durant. This is on Booker. This is on Vogel to steer this in a direction. But what we can't speak on is the amount of accountability happening right now behind the scenes. Like, we can't speak on that. We can sit here and break down the quotes after, like Vogel saying that a lot of those Milwaukee looks were contested, and just like, that's not true. That's not what happened. I think it was on Portis specifically where he said that. And if you go, like, you can put up screenshots of the Portis threes. Like, there's no one near him on three of those. And then the other two, there's kind of someone there to a certain extent. But it's more about the accountability of what's happening behind the scenes right now and how those conversations are failing, because they clearly are. This team has reached several different points in this season where not a players only meeting, not DEFCON level one right now, but they've reached those stages a couple of times already this year. And clearly the long-term effect has not gotten there. Maybe the short-term has, maybe it's been able to spark them in certain stretches, but the long-term sustainability is going. And I'm not really thinking about this year much anymore, Kevin. I got to be honest. I'm thinking about next year. And I'm like, what are the building blocks here in place to build up something for the future with what this team is? Because it's all about now for them, for sure. But they're supposed to contend next year, and they're supposed to contend the year after that. Like, as long as KD is here with Booker and Beal, they're supposed to contend. And you just see hardly anything at all. Like, if you just change your mindset about this season, look at it in terms of how are they building, their defense was getting better month to month. It was. Not anymore. I'm guessing that March rating shot up quite a bit after Sunday. Their offense was, with continuity with their six or seven guys, was starting to get there. But again, they're just bad in bad team ways. They're disorganized. They lose effort sometimes. They don't finish possessions. The lack of structure in certain senses, like this game where Bobby Portis hits two threes. Okay, chase him off the line. You know what I thought of a lot was, I'm sorry, this will be the last thing I say.
You're okay.
When Phoenix tried to do the cross-matching thing to Boston on Thursday, it took Boston two possessions to get Al Horford under the basket with the ball and score. It's like, that's what good teams do, man. They can just do that. And the Suns can say after, like, this is a unique thing. We're not going to face it very often. Well, you're going to face it, and you need to be able to adjust pretty quickly in the middle of a game. And I use the word adjust like it's an indictment of the coaching staff, but it's not. It's like execution. How much faith does the coaching staff have in those adjustments getting done? And they're just, it's not happening right now at all. So you can imagine all of these factors I'm talking about combining into how you would feel about a postseason or a playoff series where those adjustments are happening possession by possession, let alone game by game. And I am not encouraged at all. So we can sit here and talk about, are they going to win a championship or not? But like, that's long gone now. It's like, can they make the conference finals? Can they win a playoff series? I don't feel confident right now until we see something different. And we just keep coming back to the same point. We think that they're moving on in a certain direction and they're just stuck. They're just stuck here. And why? That's what everyone's going to be talking about and trying to figure out. But what ultimately matters is the result, which is that they're not growing at all.
I will give them the benefit of saying, okay, we get to a play-in, a first round series. There will be, how do you react? And it's going to be different when it's like the stakes are that much higher, I think. But I've been saying that all season about the regular season, about seeding, and it just doesn't seem like they've raised the level when it's a certain opponent. They've raised the level when it's a must win against a bad opponent. They've raised the level when we're in late March. So I'll leave that open for them to prove us wrong and all that good stuff. One thing we should hit, and I feel a little bad about the circumstances because it's a cool story, is Isaiah Thomas reportedly signing a 10-day deal with the Suns. Longtime listeners will maybe know our opinions on Isaiah Thomas, but just to me, it's a really cool comeback story because you know of how hard he works, you know of what he's fought against the odds, just watching him play at Washington, kill Arizona in the Pac-12 tournament. I saw that game live. That was fun. But like, I don't take that signing as, I don't even know what to make of it. He's a point guard. He could perhaps organize if we're believing that that's really what it's about. They don't need more scoring and offensive punch. He's a defensive liability, I'm sure, at this point. I have not watched, honestly, his G League games. It's a nice like return story that hopefully he'll be introduced this week. But like, do you think he'll be on the roster beyond a couple 10-day deals, like on the playoff roster probably, but do you think he'll be in the rotation? Like, do you think he actually moves the needle even a little bit on this team?
I think the main, not purpose, that's the wrong word, but the main bonus of this move for now is it gets a great guy that everyone respects in the locker room. Like having Thad Young come in as a buyout guy, like that kind of thing mattered, and getting him in there will be great because I think that'll, I don't want to say provide a boost to the team overall. Like you'll notice it on the court or whatever, but in terms of like how the mood is probably shifted over the last 3 weeks when they've gone 6-7 since the All-Star break, I think he'll help with that for sure. always been someone who's been thought of as a great teammate, a warrior on the court, a guy you want to play with. All those kinds of cliches certainly apply to him. Gambo had the tweet, I believe, that was the reporting on Saben Lee's two-way. And Saben Lee's been in and out of the rotation, but mostly in for the last month. But he's running out of games. He doesn't have many games left. And the Suns were in a position where they could turn him into that 15th guy when they need to, or they could straddle the line a little bit longer with the 10-day guy like they did here. And I think it makes sense because a lot of times when Saben Lee's out there, you're running into problems because he's playing with Bol Bol, who kind of has to play because he's one of the few impact role players you have off the bench, I should say. And Saben Lee just catches it in the corner. And if that's Isaiah Thomas, you're feeling a lot better about that. Now, defensively, that's where Saben Lee gives you quite a bit. That's his biggest strength right now as a player, is that and getting to the basket. Whereas Thomas will be the pigeon immediately as soon as he's on the floor, which was the case earlier in his career, but certainly would be now at this juncture. And I think that's where he ran into issues towards the end of his career, when he wasn't so much healthy, Kevin, but he was healthy enough to be playing in games here and there. It wasn't like a season ending injury or anything. He was just kind of on and off, but he wasn't able to get out there just because he really couldn't move defensively anymore. And that, like, his body was not there as it was with all of the weaknesses that he had as a defender already. But that's about it. Everyone's going to like make the point guard point, but again, like, why are you putting the ball in someone else's hands? Like, it should be in those three guys' hands. They just got to figure it out. I almost cursed right there, but like, they just need to figure it out. Like, this is not a point guard thing. Those three guys know how to run a high efficient offense. They just need to do it. And they're incapable of it right now for whatever reason. And Thomas being out there will give you someone when the ball swings to him, or when the clock is winding down, or you need to run a possession to give Durant a rest or whatever. That's when he'll be in there. But they're mostly healthy right now. So I think it's more of like, if Eric Gordon misses a little bit of time, maybe that's when he comes in, that type of thing. But think of it in the Thad Young realm, where he's there if you need him. More of just having a veteran in the locker room for now. And again, it's a 10-day, so we'll see. But it's a really cool story. He's been working really hard. I think the reports are, hopefully we get to talk to him tomorrow, but the reports were basically that he had, and he said he had plenty of opportunities to play in European places and just wanted to get back to the league. And now he's back.
It is super cool. Rip Pac-12, by the way.
Shout out Brandon Roy, man. Shout out all the UW legends, you know? Yeah. Shout out Quincy Pondexter.
He was good. The knees,
Those knees, man. The knees will get you. As far as where the team's at right now, they've got four games this week, which I think a lot of the narrative spewing around this is going to be they need to win all four of these. They got a home back-to-back against Philly and Atlanta, and then they are in San Antonio on Saturday and Monday. But then it is the gauntlet that we've discussed. The last three of those road trip are at Denver, at OKC, at New Orleans, and then you are home for four games, Cleveland, Minnesota, New Orleans, LA. LA again, that's the Clippers on the road. You end with three on the road. So it's pretty defined here. You got two at home, five on the road, four at home, three on the road, and then the season is over just like that. I'm going to put you on the spot. Are they in the play-in at the end of the year or no?
I think they'll be the higher play-in end. Yeah.
You think they'll be at seven or eight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dallas has been figuring some stuff out, and so is Golden State. Golden State right now, as we're recording this, is down 10 in the third quarter to the Knicks. Sacramento up 2 against Memphis. So it's become scoreboard watching every day at this point. But I think that the question is more facing towards the other teams and if they're capable of jumping up than the Suns are in terms of going up. Like, I don't see the Suns going 11-3 here or 9-5 or anything like that. Maybe 9-5, but like double digit wins in the last 14, I don't see it. So then it ultimately comes down to if another team can get hot enough to go there, and certain teams have more favorable schedules, I guess I'll put it as it. There's not really, I was looking at this earlier and maybe it's changed since I last looked, but 10th toughest schedule for Sacramento, but they've got a couple of freebies left. They've got Washington, Portland, Toronto, Memphis right now, Brooklyn and Utah. as well. Golden State, actually, Kevin, is the they're at 27th in terms of strength of schedule, and Dallas is 29th. Dallas only has two games against Sacramento, one game against Miami, two against Golden State, which you would argue isn't a top-tier team, and then one against OKC, but then they've got two against the Rockets and the Jazz, one against Atlanta, one against Charlotte, one against San Antonio, and one against Detroit. And it's kind of a similar look for Golden State as well. So those teams have the easier schedules for sure. But yeah, I mean, we'll see if something clicks together here for them in the last 14 games. It feels funny to say now with everything, or not funny, but just weird to say with everything going on right now, but they got to stay healthy through these last 14 games. We're at that point of the year now where if you have a guy pull a hamstring and he misses 3 weeks, now you're talking about play-in certified, but then also, is he going to be back for the play-in, and is he going to be 100% healthy? Like, we're at that time now where I believe the play-in tournament starts a month from tomorrow, 4 weeks from Tuesday is when that starts. But yeah, I don't think we have to hammer it down too much anymore. I mean, we'll get into it more. There's plenty of conversations to have. We can unload everything right now, or we can actually wait until what we think will happen, which is maybe a first round exit, maybe a second round exit. But we'll see. But it's trending that way. And I think like JJ Redick and Tim Legler talked about it on their podcast. They're out on them as contenders. And I think if you weren't there already, I think you're there now based on that spotlight, those big games with personnel missing and how it went.
Yeah. And it's kind of, they have a buffer, like they're three games up on Golden State and the Lakers. So that's allows you some air at this rate, but yeah, you're going to have to beat out both the Dallas and the Kings to get out of the play-in. And then I don't think the Pels or anyone's going to fall off above them. So yeah, it's almost starting to look kind of clear right now.
It's almost starting to look like there's one spot. Like we're almost there. I think the Pelicans need to keep playing this way for two more weeks. But the Pelicans have been great. They're one out in the loss column from fourth for the Clippers, who are going the other way. Yeah. Now, we'll see how Clippers' injuries go and everything. But, I mean, we got Paul George quotes after the game saying he doesn't think they have a culture or an identity right now. So maybe they could slip. They're three back in the loss column, or three ahead in the loss column from Sacramento. Again, that's like a – when we do this podcast in two episodes, we're going to be able to really tell, like, okay, what actual movement can happen. We're just about there from ruling out four and five, but I'm not there just yet, particularly, I think, for the Clippers. The Pelicans aren't going to go 3-11 or whatever, but who knows?
What else? What else we got? Is there any, I guess, drastic move you would want to see from the Suns, whether that's rotations, whether that's like a shock to the system that you think was just like, hey, we got to shock the system like in the next few weeks?
I wouldn't be surprised if they try Royce in the starting lineup, but I think that would be a mistake. I think Grayson's been awesome. I think that, yes, some of the problems on Sunday are tied to how they can't stop anyone on the ball, but it's not like Royce is necessarily going to stop, like lock up Damian Lillard all of a sudden. You know what I mean? He's going to be much more provide much more resistance, but nothing like that. I think more the question is what can change over the next month. And it's just see them play a consistent game of basketball. And that sounds like lazy cliches, but the line that I've used in recaps, like almost a dozen times, probably in game recaps this year, has been, they don't even have a consistent 40 minutes yet, let alone 48. And once if we see like five or six games here where they actually play a consistent game, like that Miami win, like that New Orleans win, there's a reason I can name them off the top of my head, because there have been so few.
Yeah.
So once I see those, that's when my mind will change. It's like, okay, they could make some noise now. But until they prove to be consistent, and until they can get over the fourth quarter demons, by the way, the check-in there, the fourth quarter numbers are not quite as horrific since the All-Star break, but they're still quite bad, particularly offensively. It hasn't gotten better. I'm curious to see if anything kind of sort of changed over the weekend. I don't really think that it did necessarily, but I think that ultimately what I see when we get to those times and when we get to the fourth quarter, it's just the same thing. Like it's on repeat at this point. It doesn't even bear mentioning really anything specifically. So since the All-Star break now, the Suns are, excuse me, they're 11th in offensive rating for the whole game. So that's different than the fourth quarter, excuse me. The fourth quarter offense is now at 25th. It's up to 107.4 over 13 games, which is up. That's still really bad, but it was like 102 before. As for the fourth quarter defense, it's at 117, the defensive rating, or excuse me, 115, so 20th. So they're sort of getting there. They're not last, Kevin. They're 23rd in net rating since the All-Star break, but not the mark, the marketed, the marginal improvement, excuse me, that we would want to see. So I guess those are my things. Like, I want to see consistency, and that obviously ties to the fourth quarter. But anything for you? Are you going to say, like, start two bigs? Are you going to do something crazy right now? What's up?
I was thinking about the Royce thing, and honestly, I was like, in my brain, does it make sense to move Beal to the bench just to really shake things up, but then you're messing with him and he doesn't deserve that? It's not even about him. It's just like, you can't take Grayson out because of the matchups, and then you're messing with the whole rotations of the entire season. But also, like, I don't really care at this point. It hasn't worked. But yeah, it's that. And I'm thinking of ways to make the bench more effective and get more out of it. And Kevin Durant, I just looked this up today, he's averaging 39 minutes per game post All-Star break. 3-point numbers obviously have fallen. The others, like, his relatively, he's under 50% shooting overall. Free throw shooting is not great for him. I don't know if that's tired legs, but I don't like 39 minutes for Kevin Durant when, especially coming off, was that the Bucks game? He took 10 shots. Like, something has got to give. And you need to try new things. And I just, that's grasping at straws, though. I don't know exactly what new things would help this team, but they need something, man.
I will say, if the backup big thing continues with the quality that it's been, I would just start the playoffs with just one center and go small as soon as he comes off the floor. I don't know if I would do that now because wear down effect, but once you get to the playoffs, yeah, probably I would probably do that. Definitely with, depends on who the matchup is, of course, but even if it's a team with a center that has size off the bench, I would still look into it. You want to talk about this the Cincinnati tournament before we go? Impromptu Cats talk.
Yeah, sure. It's going to be similar as the Phoenix Suns talk to some degree, I think.
Well, we've got bad juju out of the gates because this Long Beach State story is awesome. The coach gets fired on a Monday, and then on Sunday, he gets them in the tournament by them winning the conference tournament. So we got bad juju, bad narrative juju there out of the gates. But briefly looked at their statistical profile, and I don't think they're worth worrying about. I'm worried about both Dayton and Nevada. It seems like all of the people who know college basketball and know these teams are not worried about Dayton and Nevada. Dayton plays super slow and they have a top 20 offense. They don't really have size, but they're efficient and they don't take a ton of threes though. Both them and Nevada shoot the ball well, but they don't jack. So it would just have to be them like getting hot in the right ways. Nevada doesn't have size either. Both of them are really bad rebounding teams, which is where you would like to see Arizona dominate, where they have all year. But yeah, I'm worried about that second round matchup, no matter which team it is, because both of them appear to be at least really good in some sense and like some area. Like, you're already getting to that point in the tournament where a team is really, really darn good at something. And Arizona's good at one specific thing, which is like playing with pace, but not even off misses or makes or turnovers or whatever. It's like when the style of play is there to let them play that way they did. And they were unable to reach that style of play in 2 out of 3 of their games, which they both lost. So
I'm looking at a Baylor matchup. I believe that would be the third game in Sweet 16, if my bracket in my head is correct. They play zone. They would just stop that team from having that pace you just talked about. I'm worried about that game, which I don't know if that's a failure or not. Like, if you're a 2 seed losing to, like, I think Baylor's 3. I've clearly looked at the bracket super close. But yeah, I think surprise upset would be shocking a little. Does Long Beach State have like a semi-NBA caliber guy on it? I don't know.
Not really. They had this wing who was playing really well, who had like a double-double. in the championship game that I was watching. Yeah, Baylor's top 10 in offense this year, and they are in pace for KenPom. They're 281, so they play pretty slow, and that would pose problems as well. I think the season's a failure unless they have to get to the Elite Eight minimum, or the season's a failure.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. So that would include a Baylor loss. So if they lost to Baylor, I would count that as a failure for sure. But yeah, like I said, I'm worried about that. Clemson and New Mexico seem to have like something to them where they could cause problems to Baylor. We've seen Colgate pop up in the past doing stuff. So I don't know. The funny thing is, if North Carolina was the three, I think I would feel better about it. But they're the one, and you got to get to the Elite Eight first to play them. And I don't think they're going to make it there anyway. So. Yeah. We'll see. I'm worried. I think Alabama might make it out of there. I don't know. I have a bad feeling about North Carolina, but sorry, I'm not one of those talking heads on TV that makes bold takes like picking all the one seeds to go. That was crazy. They were like, I think Clark Kellogg started his answer by saying like, you add up all the seeds, the Final Four last year was 23. And then the screen turns on behind him and it's like 1, 1, 2, 1. That's five, Clark. That adds up to five.
Fun stuff, dude. Shouts to GCU. I think we both watched at least their last game. I'm curious about they get a win. That'd be cool.
It seems like St. Mary's is a team that a lot of people like, which is unfortunate, but Grant Foster looks like an NBA player to me. I went around and looked around draft boards and stuff, and it didn't seem like Vicini had him like a couple of months ago, top 60, but didn't really see him on ESPN's or where else did I look? The Ringer. I looked at them too, and he wasn't on those. And it seems like he should be. He's older, but he's awesome.
He was on ESPN's like a few months ago, I believe, somewhere.
Okay, yeah. Tyon Grant Foster is his name. He was a player at Kansas, I want to say. Transfers to DePaul. Halftime of his first game with DePaul. Collapses. He later requires two heart surgeries. At a certain point, his doctors are like, yeah, you're never going to be able to play basketball again, basically. The weird part of that story is I believe that he was like good for a couple of months and they just thought it was like a random one-time occurrence thing and all the testing came back to be okay. And then he went to go, I believe, play with Christian Brown was the story. And then he had another incident. So then he had the two surgeries, just barely has any offers coming out, trying to like reestablish himself, goes to GCU and one whack player of the year, 6'7". Ultra athletic wing, has some handle to him, can shoot off the dribble. The numbers aren't particularly great, but I was just watching him eye test wise and I was like, oh yeah, like this will come in a couple of years if he sticks with it. And he seemed great. They've got people back from last year's team and they've got people back from even the team that made it for the first time 3 years ago, I believe. So they've got like a lot of experience, so it should be interesting. But yeah, I'm worried about the Cats. I think my whole thing there, Kevin, is that Ballo is my key. He's the key to this tournament for them because Dayton, Nevada, and Long Beach State are all teams that don't have size. And that is where he will come in and like really have to like establish himself and be that double-double, not have a, I'm trying to think of the way to say it, not have like a quiet double-double, you know what I mean?
Yeah, where he's doing more than cleaning up. Yeah. I don't know whether it's a worrisome thing that Arizona's two best players, who are guards, Caleb Love, Pell Larson, looked not great the last few games. And then on the other hand, their two bench guys, Jaden Bradley, KJ Lewis, did look good. So it's like, hey, if we all play well together, we have a lot of guards that are kind of good. But yeah, it feels like a crapshoot right now, which is not good. Not what you want to say about a number two seed.
It's a total crapshoot. If they get elite Caleb Love, they can beat anyone, and they probably will beat anyone if he's playing at that level, because that'll help all the other guys relax. But if he starts struggling and other people are asked to do stuff, I think you had the tweet where it's like, all you need to do to beat the zone is just run a ball screen at the top of the key. But no one feels good about doing that.
Yeah, you can split that defense. They're not playing good defense, but no one's confident enough to do it. Yeah.
Problems. There are problems. Well, we'll see. All right, well, we'll be back next week, and it'll be an interesting episode because, like I said, we're going to be talking before or after all these four games that feel like the four that the Suns have to win, and if they don't win at least three, then it feels like really uphill sledding. Cause then, like I said, that first five, especially, but New Orleans playing better than anyone. Maybe the two Clippers games are easier than you think now, but that's about it. That Sacramento game could be it. Like, that could be what decides where they are, because it has tiebreaker stakes as well. So a lot more will change, but it stays the same for now in that way, I guess.
Yes. Yes, yes.
All right, bud. We'll say words out loud next week. What do you say?
Let's do it. Yep.
Bye, everyone.